Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You're listening to Achtung Norwalk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Burma. Accept no savagery.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to a very special and very personal edition of Achtung Millwall. Joining me on this special edition is my co-confederate, Mr. Neil Fisler. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Hello, Nick. How you going, mate? Happy 50th, mate.
Happy 50th. That's the reason why it's a personal show, listeners. Today, March the 31st, we're recording this Thursday afternoon. And it is exactly 50 years, listeners, since the very first time that I set foot in Coldblow Lane, which was March the 31st, 1972, when the Lions beat Portsmouth in 1-0 at the Den in a famous run, a near-miss run towards promotion. A game that we've covered quite a few times and the season we've covered quite a few times. But 50 years, long time, Neil. It's a very strange feeling, 50 years of following Mill. It's the one single thing that's followed me through my life. It's quite an odd feeling when you look back at it from that perspective.
It's probably 50 years of heartache, misery, every single emotion that you could, human emotion that you could possibly go through. It's probably something that you probably don't regret doing. You walk out of a ground on a Wednesday, Tuesday night, it's pissing down with rain. We've just been outplayed by some hellhole up north that you don't even want to visit in your life. And you vow to yourself, I'm never going to do this again.
Yet, number of times.
Home game, sun comes out. It brightens the mood in your brain there for yet another round of it. Mate, it's just one of those things. Football is a strange and cruel mistress, and Millwall's even worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 50 years ago today, listeners, was the first time that I clanked through the turnstiles off of Coldblow Lane, having walked across with my 11-year-old mates from school. Every time I think about it, it's a bit weird. Bunch of 11-year-olds take off on the trains and go to football for the afternoon, and no one batted an eyelid. Such were the times. So what I've done for this show, because normally we do our Millwall history fixtures, Neil, wouldn't we, for April, but we've slightly kept in touch with that a little bit, but otherwise it's a personal choice of five fixtures from my Millwall life that have meant something to me, and that's been the framework that I've tried to pick these games out. There's a lot of big games that I've seen in that time. It's quite hard to sift it down to five, but I've five plus one, actually. But these have personal impact in a way that maybe some of the others did, but didn't in quite the same level.
I think we started off at 10, didn't we? And then we realised that we'd probably...
10 was a lot. We started off... We started off, listeners, with doing a top 10, but that's just a lot of hard work. I'm getting too old for this game, listeners, and I've skinned it down to five plus one. One infamy and five positives, because you can't follow Millwall nil without staying in touch with disaster and infamy. It is the shadow that follows us all around, isn't it? And there's also a coincidence that we're playing at Luton on Saturday, and I thought it might just give us a link with our normal format of the forthcoming month's fixtures. But this is obviously more of a personal one. I'm going to kick us off with a day that lives in infamy. The 1985 FA Cup quarter-final, Luton Town 1, Millwall 0. Were you at that game, Neil? Did you go to that one?
I think I was still at school.
Were you still at school? I went to it.
I was just about to leave school at the time.
I went to it. And it was a funny, it was a funny time in my life at that point. I wasn't going very regularly at that point. So I'd done about a glory hunt. I'd been to the Leicester game, the 2-0 win in the previous round when Gary Lineker famously took the pitch at the Den. We'd beaten Leicester in the fifth round, that would be. But we've covered that game in previous shows. So I've gone for a game that lives in infamy, the famous events of the 13th of March, 1985.
Achtung, Millwall.
And the scene's still going on after the final whistle here. Supporters, or so they would call themselves, they're not, have gone across and started to throw seats out of the stand, adding to the scene of devastation and unrest which the police are trying to control. One has to say that in a week when the Chelsea crowd trouble is going to be investigated by the Football Association, there's another major inquiry needed here. And something, as we've said before, sooner or later has got to be done to try to prevent people like this spoiling the football for others.
I couldn't really tell you much about the game, Neil, because the ground was packed to a level that still takes the breath away a little bit. My brother and I went quite late. I think it was a pay on the day. This is unbelievable when you repeat this stuff back. But I think Luton made it pay on the day for an FA Cup quarter final against Millwall midweek, Wednesday night. Incredible when you think about it, isn't it?
Absolutely. It was just a different era, wasn't it? It was an era where you could rock up to a game on a Saturday afternoon wherever you liked, virtually, wasn't it? And you could get in as long as you could go wherever. You didn't need to plan your life in particular detail.
This was your norm. And interesting, as a consequence to the events of that night, which we will come on to in a moment, one of the punishments meted out to the Lions was that their games were made all ticket. And that was seen as a punishment. It's the norm now. You wouldn't really expect to go to any sports event, really, without a ticket being issued. But back then, it was give some cash to a man on a turnstile and in you walked. And so it was on this famous stroke infamous night at Kenilworth Road, Luton. We arrived reasonably late. I wasn't going to go, and I can't remember why I wasn't going to go. My brother says, shall we go? And at the time, he owned a Triumph Stag, and it was about 6:30 at night, and the game kicked off, I think, 7:45, I think. He said, shall we go? I said, well, it's 6:30 now. You know, how are we going to get round to Luton? And, you know, he said, oh, we'll shoot round in the Stag. And we tunned it round, literally tunned it around the M25. So we did get there. I think the game had kicked off by the time I walked into the ground with him. But you couldn't see a thing, Neil. I mean, I got a glimpse of about a quarter of the right side of the pitch because the terracing was so packed. There were people on the fences. There were people, it was just a wall of bodies in front of us. Everywhere you looked, there were people holding on to whatever view they could muster. It was a horrible night, really. The game was interrupted on a number of occasions. There was the famous scenes, of course, after the game of the police being chased off the pitch by and the seats being ripped out of the side stand, that strange little lower stand that Luton has, and the kind of frisbee style seats being thrown across the pitch.
Ground improvements before the Taylor report, wasn't it, which actually followed on from this not long afterwards, wasn't it? And yeah, but it's quite amazing that Hillsborough was what, 3-4 years after this?
Well, actually, I mean, just for the purposes of our show listeners, I mean, obviously, this is one of the turning points of a decade of turning points. I suppose when you think of football existing in its own world, and it does to some extent, but when you look at the list of events of the 1980s, it was a tumultuous time. And having lived through it, you don't really realise how much went on. The Brixton riots, 1981, the miners' strike, Battle of Orgreave, and there was riot and police battles with the striking miners, 1984 to 85. Millwall's Luton riot began a sequence of disasters in football. March, Luton riot, shall we call it. May, the Bradford fire disaster, where 56 people, I think, tragically lost their lives at a wooden stand that set fire at Bradford City. May, the Heysel Stadium riot, where 80 or 90 people died in the European Cup final, Liverpool versus Juventus. An event that still, this is not a Liverpool show, but it's an event that really outweighed this evening's events at Kenilworth. But somehow Millwall, being Millwall, has always retained the name in a way that Liverpool somehow didn't. Different show for that listeners. And then in October, the Broadwater Farm, right? So it was a tumultuous period of history, you know, when you look back at it in that way, wasn't it? The 1980s.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that Mrs. Thatcher wasn't the most popular.
No, she wasn't.
Say she was selling off national assets, and there was a lot of social discontent. I think I'm not good at this kind of thing, but there was discontent between those that had stuff and those that didn't have stuff.
It was a divided period in our history, and there's, you know, you can argue the rights and wrongs of the various players in the national story at that time, but one thing is for certain, it was a period of British history where riot became every day, common, let's be a bit more, show a little bit more perspective. It happened a lot, as we've just read out there. I'm just looking at the Daily Mirror front page. This is for March 14th, Neil. Yep. Soccer hell. This is front page. We only make the front page when there's been a riot, mate. And then we are front and back page of the Daily Mirror. All the press next day carried this. FA Cup riot, 31 police hurt, 31 thugs held. Hundreds of soccer savages ran riot at an FA Cup tie. They halted the match, then rampaged through the town of Luton in some of the worst football violence Britain has ever seen. And there's an image on the front of rampaging Millwall thugs, as they list it here. That was pages of coverage inside, pages of coverage across the sports pages at the back. And so it continued. When you look at these, library archives, it's interesting to see how long a story survives on the front page. Now, I mean, you've worked in the trade, and generally the lifespan of a story is quite quick, isn't it? But this one held the front pages and certainly the back pages for days afterwards.
Yeah, I think people were genuinely shocked by what happened. I think it did shock the nation that...
Absolutely.
I think everybody knew that this kind of thing went on and people had experienced this kind of thing. But this was Millwall, wasn't it? Well, we had the reputation and it was any excuse. And I think it played into Thatcher's hands, I think, in a way. She didn't like football. She wanted to bring in all kinds of membership schemes after this and everything, didn't she? So yeah. I think we were the tip of the iceberg. I think it had been going on for such a long time.
It had football
to hang their coat on, basically, as Reg famously said, didn't he?
He did. The
I think this was it.
I think it was. It was a turning point in the game. One of a number, as we've said, and that during these years of the 1980s. The story continued on Friday, March the 15th. Hammer the thugs, says the Daily Mirror. Thatcher joins the call for stiffer sentencing. Police want trouble clubs shut down. I think there was a real fear if not a means to that clubs might get shut down. Interestingly, on the Saturday, so the story is living on from Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday. Saturday, it's still on, it's on the back pages by the Saturday. So the back page is that Brentford refusing to play Millwall on police advice, it says. Millwall are shunned as game is KO'd. Cold shoulder being the headlines. And so it continued. It was certainly a landmark moment in football, certainly a landmark moment in Millwall history, because there'd been a number of incidents. I remember Slough away in the early 80s, Neil, that made the headlines.
Very famous FA Cup tie, wasn't it, where we had a couple of players sent off and didn't want the players smash up the dressing room or something like that.
And I think the chairman threatened to close the club down at the time, Alan Thorne of the Thorne family, which we've spoken about a few times on our history show. And there it was. It was a rough night. I mean, we got beat in the cup, went out to national program. Strangely, it was a successful season, which is a very odd thing in the context of all this. Because we'd get promoted that year, wouldn't we? It was the year of Fashanu and George Graham and Cusack and others. And we would get promoted from the third division. Another interesting thing, just to close this day of infamy, was that the aftermath, as I've listed it here, is that by July, Millwall's cleared. The Daily Mirror say the Football Association left themselves open to ridicule, not for the first time, total ridicule, when an appeals committee decided that neither Millwall nor Luton were to blame for the riots at Kenilworth Road last March. So the Millwall's original £7,500 fine had been lifted, and Luton had been ordered to fence in the whole of their ground. A decision would infuriate many.
I think there's a couple of things. Funnily enough, if you actually turn to the back page, the back page says they played some football too.
In the middle of it all.
And, one of the two things to actually take from that was the referee was actually a police inspector.
David, was he? I didn't know that.
if you read it. And if you actually, and if you actually read from the front page, some Millwall fans claim that Chelsea's notorious thugs were to blame.
Yeah,
the large section of the Chelsea mob had made the 30-mile trip to Luton just to cause trouble. That's just to add a little bit of intrigue. Oh yes, and by the way, Brian Steen scored the only goal of the game.
I think Luton would go out in the semi-finals of the FA Cup. That left the whole club a bit like Millwall. I think it left a lot of people feeling quite empty afterwards. The story about Chelsea getting involved, I don't know. I mean, I remember reading that at the time, and I'd be interested and intrigued if any listeners to the show can shed any light they would be willing to shed on it. I'm not, it's just always been an aspect of the story that fascinated me. I don't know if it's true. I don't think it's true. But I could be wrong because I'm not involved in that kind of scene. But there we are. So there we are. That's my first. Because I thought you have to choose a day of infamy, Neil, because you can't follow Millwall for 50 years and not know what it is to face triumph and disaster. Maybe not so much triumph, but disaster on occasions. So there we are, 1985, Luton away. Do any memories of anyone wants to send me, then I'll review them and censor them as appropriate for possible rebroadcast or not, depending on what you send me. We'll see.
Achtung, Mehlball.
I want to move along, Neil, if we may, to happier occasions. And I've picked out a game here. It was actually the first season where I started going 72. And this was the first season where I can say we were successful. And that's 1975-76. We'd been relegated to the third division. And we eventually achieved promotion in a wonderful season, one of my favourite ever seasons. I was 14 going towards 15 at that point. And it was a wonderful season of Gordon Jago's Blue and White Army, as we used to sing. And the game I've picked out, just to illustrate that, I think I might have mentioned it before, but it's Millwall 3, Brighton Hove Albion 1, played, I believe it was a Good Friday game, the 16th of April. Friday.
Was indeed a Good Friday.
A 3-1 win. Some wonderful names. Trevor Lee, one of my favourite ever players. John Seisman and Terry Brisley played in front of 23,000 at a sun-soaked den. I can remember it to this day. I've got the back page of the Daily Mirror here. Lions maul Mal's hopes because the sub-story of the season was that we're in the third division alongside Crystal Palace, managed by Big Mal, Big Mouth, Big Mal. And I think he predicted pre-season they were going to go up, which made it all the sweeter, Neil, all the sweeter. With his fedora hat and 70s flared style, you know.
Porn star girlfriend and everything. Yeah, Malcolm Allison, 22,008, the biggest crowd for four seasons.
It was a wonderful game. I can still remember, because you find in life, listeners, that moments stand out, and the moment that stands out is actually a picture of it on the back page of the Mirror that I'm looking at here. It's an overhead kick by Trevor Lee, who'd come into the team along with Phil Walker that season. From Epsom and Ewell. You wouldn't do that now, Neil, would you? You wouldn't sign a duo, two non-league players from Epsom and Ewell and go straight into the first team. And did they make an impact? They were both of them. Phil Walker and Trevor Lee made a huge impact on a promotion-winning side. The football was somehow simpler and more... I don't know if it's more enjoyable, but it just seemed to relate to you more then. But that's possibly age creeping up on me. I don't know.
But possibly the last player to do that would have been Lee Gregory, of course, came in.
Lee Gregory,
Didn't really hit it off immediately, took some time to hit the ground. And
yeah. I mean, I suppose Steve Morrison, didn't he come in from Stevenage? Yeah. But again, it took some time for him to warm up. Both Trevor Lee and Phil Walker seemed to make an immediate impact, as memory serves. But this was a wonderful day, 3-1 win for the Lions, and we would go on that season to edge out Crystal Palace in one of the strangest games. I mentioned this the other day when I did an interview with, I think it was the BBC. They asked me one of my favourite games, and just to be cussed, I picked out Crystal Palace 0, Chesterfield 0 at Selhurst Park, because that was packed with Millwall fans at the White Horse Lane terracing, as it was then. Because we needed Crystal Palace needed to win all their last games, and we needed Chesterfield to pull off a draw, and so they did. And I don't think I've forgotten the look of surprise on the Chesterfield goalkeeper as he came out to a wall of noise cheering on Chesterfield on a midweek away fixture at Selhurst Park. I don't think they might have had a coach load normally, as it was. He got the whole White Horse Lane terrace cheering for Chesterfield. And promotion followed, and it was wonderful, wonderful times. First time I ever had any success as a Millwall fan, I think it stands out in my mind.
This was actually at the time, I think Gordon Jago was promised by Herbert Burnage that the days of selling were over. If one of our most promising players, like Phil Walker, was sold, then I would depart from Millwall before him. I think it was in the programme or something before this game. And Brighton were no mean team. I know we were up there with Cardiff, Hereford, and
contenders. Yeah.
And the Nigels and the goals. It sounds like one hell of a game. A Dave Donaldson cross was headed back by Seisman and Trevor Lee overhead kick. And that made it 1-0. Then Joe Kinnear, remember him?
Joe Kinnear, Spurs,
back header fell short of the goalkeeper and Seisman poked home.
Yeah.
Terry Brisley made it 3-0.
Yeah.
And then Fred Binney, Peter Taylor, member of the Clough Taylor.
He was managing them at the time. Yeah, that's right. I think they'd had a falling out, and he was managing in Brighton, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think insulted
him, I think.
For about a week or something like that, or well, after not so long, and they had a falling out. I think it's, I can vaguely remember it from the damned United. Terrific.
I think
film.
that I think that it is a terrific film. Wonderful managers, Brian Clough. As a team, they work better, I think, probably both. And Peter Taylor was Clough's famous sidekick at Nottingham Forest. The Millwall team that day is, I go slightly misty-eyed at these names, Neil. Ray Goddard in goal, John Moore, Barry Kitchener, Tony Hazel. I want to come back to Tony, if I may. Dave Donaldson, you've mentioned already. That's across the back line. Trevor Lee, we've mentioned. Terry Briz. Phil Walker. Chris McGrath is a name I've forgotten. And it's interesting when you do this research. I've just completely forgotten that he'd played for us. He was a good player, actually. I believe a Northern Irish international, if memory.
Yeah, and I think didn't we get him just after Gordon Hill went to Manchester United? Or
yeah, same season, I think. Yeah, season after, possibly. And then the front two, a really good front two, actually, of John Seisman and Phil Summerall, who was he was a decent striker. I think he was one of those strikers that didn't get the goals, but he did a lot of work. And strikers like that tend not to be terribly popular then, but he was. I thought he was a good player.
You know, he told me he didn't ever think he was the most popular player then. But, yeah, I think he was leading goal scorer that season. Did he get something like 10 or 12 goals or something like that?
It was a low total. And I think also he'd replaced Alf Wood, who was immensely popular and was as brave a striker as I've ever seen in a Millwall shirt. And, you know, was get goals and would put his head in where it hurt, and was a wonderful, wonderful Millwall striker in the true sense of that word. I've picked out two names from the Who's Who book, actually. You know, I don't know who wrote that book. Whoever wrote it really knows their stuff, listeners. Millwall Who's Who. I picked out Tony Hazel. Who I liked. He was a very solid, stocky, a kind of defensive midfielder. You could play in both, really. But a fact that I'd learned from the book, actually, I never knew this. I was a fan of there used to be a TV private detective series in the 70s, which starred Nicholas Ball and had been written by Terry Venables. I never realised that Hazel, the TV series, was named after Tony Hazel. And that's a fact that's in the Who's Who book. And I thought that's a real gem of information I never knew until I did the research for this show today. So thank you for that, mate.
Information I must have got from somewhere. Christ knows where.
Great play. Good striker for a free kick, I think, actually, Tony Hazel, from memory. But he'd been around the track a few times, QPR, Palace, Millwall, Charlton. Also, just we mentioned Dave Donaldson earlier on as well, another player that I really liked. He'd come in the early 70s. I think he replaced Eddie Jones, or was it Harry Cripps and Eddie Jones? Harry Cripps and Brian Brown were replaced by Dave Donaldson and Eddie Jones. And this was a big deal down there at the time. It felt like, a changing of the guard almost. But a very honest, solid fullback, Dave Donaldson. And he was with us for some time. Joined us in May 73. I haven't got how many appearances made, but he was there for the bulk of the 70s, Dave Dalton. I really liked him as well. He's a good player.
Yeah, he was a player I think we got on the free transfer from Arsenal, didn't we?
That's right. I think he went to Cambridge in the end when he left us.
He made 264 appearances and scored 2 goals. Spent 7 seasons at the club.
Good player. He had a great haircut as well. Very 70s kind of Rod Stewart style haircut at times.
Yeah, it was a free transfer. I think after Brian Brown and Harry Cripps had fallen out of favour, I think with Benny at the time, it would have been a Benny Fenton signing. Another Benny Fenton signing that served extraordinarily well over the years.
A very shrewd manager, Benny Fenton. I mean, he ran out of road in the end, but it was a shame because I think that he could have... You don't get time in football, and unfortunately, I think Benny had probably used up his time by the time he left us, but he was a great judge of a player, in my opinion, when you look back all these years later.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Side towards Summerhill, now Brisley. A chance now on the far side for Selvidge, and he scores! And Billy will go indeed for Millwall.
Move along, if we may. And then there is YouTube footage of this fixture, listeners, and I recommend you have a look at it because it's wonderful. It's a snapshot of mid-70s football at Coalblow Lane, and it's a wonderful day. It was by far the biggest game that I had ever been to, Neil, in terms of Millwall hysteria. This was Millwall 3, Chelsea 0, a game played on the 4th of September 1976. I was just short of my 16th birthday by this stage. And you can see footage of it. I recommend that you do, listeners, because the big match were there, and you knew you had a big game at Millwall when the big match were in town there, that scaffolded camera gantry set up on the halfway line. And we'd been promoted. This was a Division 2 game. Chelsea, I think, had been relegated. I believe it was a previous season. And, well, this wasn't Chelsea of the modern era. Not Roman Abramovich anymore, are they? But they're the kind of European Cup-winning Chelsea. This was the slightly faded, odd FA Cup show business followed King's Road pub level Chelsea of the 60s and the 70s. But they still brought a certain faded glamour. It's like, I don't know, trying to think of it. It's like Tom Jones playing the local Odeon or something. They brought a certain glow of tawdry show business to the Den. And it was by far the biggest game I'd ever been at.
And the boys of the West End, really, weren't they? The kings of the Road. They were still living off that kind of...
Yeah.
And for a while, on a European Cup Winners' Cup and an FA Cup, and
yeah, the odd battle with the odd kind of hungover battle with Leeds on where they'd all have a fight on the pitch, and you know, I used to manage a block of flats in Chelsea, and it was always full up with kind of wannabe faded B-list show business types, you know, and that was it's always been my image of Chelsea as a football. It's very hard for me to this day, listeners, to get with the kind of European super group super level that they're at now. Goals by Barry Salvage. He was a great player. Winger, Barry Salvage. Free transfer from Brentford, I'm reading here in this report in the Daily Mirror. Ray Evans, Neil, a fullback from Tottenham, I believe.
Yeah.
One of my favourite ever players for the Lions. I mean, there's always so many listeners. But he struck a free kick, a 25-yard free kick, I'm reading here in the Daily Mirror report. And, of course, Chelsea were fielding Ray Wilkins, Butch Wilkins, as he was known at that point, in their midfield. So they weren't exactly, I think they were favourites to go up, but just because of their name. And we absolutely tore them to shreds. And I think it was Terry Brisley scored the third. It was a header that comes off the crossbar and hits ex-England goalkeeper Peter Benetti on the bum and goes in the net. So it was just like the ultimate 45 minutes of pure Millwall blistering football. And wow. I've never forgotten it. Wonderful, wonderful day.
There's something I've just realised is the match report's written by a very good friend of mine, Tony Roach.
Oh, okay.
Who became the Rugby Union correspondent of The Sun for a number of years.
Wow.
His son, Dan, was actually an eight numbered. A little bit of useless information for you.
Yes, that's the kind of detail we like. We like that kind of thing. Wonderful day in my Millwall life.
Chelsea were a big team. It would have been a big game, and you'd have got, I guess you got that big game buzz.
Oh, manic. It was one of the...
You to whip it up back then, would you? It would have just taken care of itself almost.
It took care of itself. It was the first time, because the way that teams would enter the pitch, traditionally, listeners, and you're right, this 1970s here, this was the first time I'd ever seen it, where both teams walked out together. It's the norm, it's the standard now, and you couldn't imagine anything else. But traditionally, when I first started going, the away team would come out first, kick their balls out and run on the pitch to booze and abuse. And, you know, then you had the pantomime counterpoint to that when Millwall came out. They cheered to the rafters because, you know, you had the villains of the piece and then the heroes as they came on. Didn't always finish like that. So, you know, depending on the result, then it might be the other way around when the teams left the pitch. But that this game here was the first time I saw both teams enter the pitch together. And I think when you watch the YouTube footage, Brian Moore makes the point, it's in an effort to show solidarity. Peace on the terraces, I think, is the expression that
I think
uses.
They were probably more worried about the place getting ripped apart, weren't they?
It was a lively afternoon, listeners. I'm going to go no further. We only just covered the Luton game. And I think we can say no more than Mill versus Chelsea 76 was a lively afternoon in and around New Cross. So that's my second choice of positivity, I think, there. Yeah.
Achtung, Mehlball.
We're going to move along, Neil. I'm going to wind forward now. I stress, listeners, also that there'd be many, many big games in between these choices, and these are just games that I went to and that mattered to me. So odd as it might sound, I've missed out some fairly big moments. Like I wasn't at Hull. I didn't go to that game. I was expecting us to win promotion, or hoping for us to win promotion in the final game versus Blackburn, but it had all been sewn up to Boo Ferry Park in 1988. So instead, I've chosen a manic afternoon, Neil. 1988, 17th of September, our first home win in the First Division, 0-2, Everton 1. There's a wonderful picture, colour picture in the Daily Mirror of Cass, 2-goal, Tony. As we put Everton to the sword. It was a wonderful sunny afternoon. It was the first big team that we'd played. We'd beaten Derby in the First Division, so we'd actually had a win under our belt, which was my main concern when we got promoted, that we actually won at least one game in the top flight. And then this was the first one of the big five, as they were called back then, the five richest clubs, which still at that point included Everton. And so it's probably our biggest first test in the top flight. And as ever with Millwall, I think we're, as a club, we are at our best, at our strongest in what seems to be a cup tie style atmosphere. And this was the memory of this day was that, you know, it was frenetic. The action was end to end. Everton had Peter Reid. I remember him playing for Everton, was a player that I've always admired. But they came up against a Lions side that showed no mercy to them. And a classic, you know, that when you look at the lineup for this fixture, Brian Horn, backline Ian Dawes, Steve Wood, Alan McCleary, Danny Salmon, replaced by Keith Stevens in the 30th minute. Midfield, Les Briley, Terry Hurlock, Kevin O'Callaghan, and Cascarino and Sheringham. That, if that's not a definitive Millwall 11, I don't know what is. And it was a team playing at the very maximum of their form at this point. We beat Everton 2-1. This felt like a really big result at the time, front of 17,000.
I think it's quite interesting to note that certainly the papers at the time noted that Tony Cotty had cost more, about £2 million than our entire team.
As it ever was.
And I'm just reading the match report here. Everton's first taste of Millwall was an announcement local DJ saying, "Welcome to our modest little home in your fabulous division."
I didn't hear many welcomes to our modest little home. None stick in the memory. It was a bit more gritty than that.
Yeah, but if that's true, that has got to be. That's absolutely fantastic. But Everton were a huge, huge team around about this time, weren't they? I think they'd won the league. They won the league a couple of times. And
they were champions a couple of years before.
And I think it was only their neighbours rioting at Heysel.
Yeah, which we mentioned already.
That actually stopped them from probably going on to become European champions. They were that good. Mm. Back then, they had marvellous players. Kevin Sheedy, it was fantastic. Yeah. Neville South all in goal. And I doubt there was a better goalkeeper around at that time.
No, I agree.
And at the back, and Cotty was at the height of his powers, wasn't he?
Wonderful afternoon. The other interesting thing, as an aside, because as a Millwall fan, you know, having seen some of the darker days of the third division football, and as we've mentioned already in the Day of Infamy, you know, we only get big coverage, which tends to be big coverage whenever there's been some breach of public peace and order. But the, you know, this is 2 pages with colour photos, 2 pages with a coverage across the sports pages of the Sunday Mirror. It felt really odd and pleasantly odd, if that makes any sense, for our Millwall, our little modest little club, as we've just heard it described, to get full spread coverage in the national press. Now we were unused to it. I don't know how you felt, but this was not something that we'd seen before. The overwhelming impression that left me of top flight football is the amount of coverage you get of your side, and more now, of course, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, funnily enough, I was just about to say it's even bigger now, isn't it?
Mm. Absolutely.
Written such depth on their woke sports news and everything else. And the papers are only interested in the Premier League.
So, woke sports news, I like that word. Oh, dear.
What they'd make of us now, wouldn't you?
Oh dear, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Every week, but they'd want to do stories on every week, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. I've picked out
two seasons, wasn't it? It was Millwall's 2 seasons in the sun and
top flight. Yeah, days that I'll never forget, like the song says. I've picked out Teddy as a player. I just wanted to mention. I mentioned him a few times before, but if you ask me for my favourite ever player, I've got to go for Kitch because he was such a rock, but very, very, very close behind for me is Teddy Sheringham, Neil. And I know that a lot have dwelled on his later career, whichever club he went to, he said he followed him as a fan. I think that became a bit of an ironic joke for him in the end when he went to Colchester and places like that.
That was a PR stunt, wasn't it? By
Stevenage, PR. Yeah.
Written, press officers need to come up with a line, don't they, for their press release?
They do. And he went to West Ham. We know that. I cannot ever get past the contribution that Teddy Sheringham made to Millwall Football Club. Not only did he fire us into, along with Cascarino, fire us into the top flight, he stuck around at our club when he didn't need to. He could have moved on when we were relegated back to Division 2 and produced I don't know, it's a record goal scoring season. It's a very, very high scoring season. 1983 to 1991, 262 games, 111 goals, a master of his craft. And of course, he would go on to success at Manchester United, a treble, a European Cup wins, European Champions League medal, PFA Player of the Year, England, which is, you know, I just can't. I can't hate on him, Neil. I can never forget the contribution that he made to one of the greatest, greatest seasons, if not the greatest season of Millwall's history.
I don't think anybody really hates on him.
They shouldn't do. No.
It's PR nonsense at the end of the day. It's not like he was ever really... Yeah, but I think he played for Millwall and Tottenham and he signed for West Ham, so what are they going to do?
There we are, isn't it? I think a lot of it is internet nonsense. I didn't realise he has an MBE. I'm just looking at the club Who's Who book, written by one Neil Fizzler, and we'll stick a link in the show notes for this because I do refer to it a hell of a lot now when I do these shows. But I didn't realise he had an MBE for services, I guess, to the game, I'd imagine. And there's a professional poker player now. I didn't know that.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Bad. It was just sold a bit short there by McCartney. Highfield goes alone, blocked by Pawn. Cahill! He's on the spot. That's his game. And Tim Cahill puts Millwall in front of Old Trafford in the FA Cup semi-final. What a mistake. What a mistake at the back. But my goodness, didn't they take advantage of it? But only because of that man's ability to finish a really awkward chance. Make no mistake about it, McCartney's mistake is a tough one. But Cahill's finish is right up there with the best of them.
Travel north today. Players at the other end have come down from the northeast. But their journey back is surely going to be a sad one.
We're going to move along, Neil, in the positive theme. It's a fairly obvious choice, listeners, fairly obvious choice, but these are personal games that mattered to me. And I couldn't do a list like this and not mention Millwall 1, Sunderland 0 in the semi-final of the FA Cup, the fourth of the 2004. I think, you know, the moments of that whole day, the goal scored by Tim Cahill, the run by Ifield to generate the kind of block shot, and then it fell to Kay and we put it away. And the sheer lunacy, Neil, of Millwall making an FA Cup final. I know there's a line in Only Fools and Horses about, you know, Grandad says maybe one day Millwall will make the FA Cup final. And, you know, that was I never dreamt we'd make an FA Cup final, and we did. And we made Europe. I found an article from, it's an Irish paper, Dublin Evening Herald, and the great opening paragraph, which, forgive me if I read it, it is time for Europe to become acquainted with a new song, Nessun si ama, non si importa, at San Siro. Then in German, Niemand liebt uns, es macht nichts. No one likes us and we don't care, in Italian and German. That's an imaginative opening para.
I can remember getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning to go to that game.
Yeah.
I think it was a time kickoff, wasn't it?
It was a lunchtime kickoff, yeah, that's right.
In Manchester. Do you know, I can't remember going to the game. I thought we had a chance because of the two finalists. I think it was Arsenal and Man United in the other
side. They drew each other, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and we had the easier route as we'd gone through the whole of this competition and not played anybody from the top flight, had we?
That's right.
We'd have a blast draw. And, you know, I don't ever think, I can't remember back now whether or not I had any particular thoughts about an FA Cup final.
Yeah.
Strange one. I'm trying to think now, and I can remember the day so vividly. It was warm.
I don't know if I expected. I don't know what I expected. I think I expected Millwall to fall at the final hurdle, if I'm going to be honest with listeners. I mean,
to be quite honest, because we're Millwall. Yeah. That's what we look at, isn't it? And I can remember. Funnily enough, I did an interview with Darren Ward on the other place, and. Okay, Mickey Yenner, well, I'll mention it, that Millwall
podcast. That Millwall podcast. It was only ever a joke. That's what they say in Parliament for the House of Lords. In the House of Lords, you did it, yeah.
I did a couple of hour interview with Darren Ward.
Yeah.
And to him, do you know what? One of the main things that stands out about that day is that fucking clock in the corner, the top. How slow it moved. And he said, do you know what? He said, that's what stands out for me. He said, I kept on looking at it and I thought time was going backwards.
Time froze, didn't it? That endless second half.
It seemed to be an hour that, yeah, didn't we score after 20, 30 minutes or something like that?
It was early in the first half. And I think just going back to your point about what did we expect out of the day, I think you, me, every Millwall fan that went to that landmark game expected it to go wrong on us, because the story of Millwall's have temptations, success shown to you and then taken away. Like, you can have all the toys in the shop, but not now. You've got to go and play with your broken bike or something somewhere else. And because the second half just seemed to last forever. And I thought, this is going to go, they're going to get a goal. And I thought, if Sunderland scored a goal, then it would, the game would evade our grasp, but somehow the afternoon went into like a slow motion. Every second lasted for 10 minutes, it seemed.
It's horrible. It was a horrible, horrible experience. It was a brilliant experience. Yeah. But the fact that time went so slowly.
Yeah.
And then the final whistle went, and you just, for a couple of seconds, it took some time to sink in.
Sense of disbelief. I remember I'd taken my partner at the time, a son, a stepson, if you want to. Him, he was aged about 10, 11, I think. And I remember getting to when the final whistle finally went, I think I was actually hoarse to the point I couldn't, I actually lost my voice. My voice went. So when the final whistle went, obviously the mobile phone started going off immediately because of this bizarre thing that Millwood made a cup final. And by default, we were going to play in the UEFA Cup, as the rules allowed at that point. I think they changed it. It was like the Millwall amendment, wasn't it? You couldn't have Millwall ever playing in Europe ever again by default. And I took a call, but I couldn't speak. I'd lost my voice because you just want, I think the sheer roar, I think that very mill idea that if you could roar loud enough that somehow you kept the ball at bay, it was almost physically. Didn't the Dicchio hit a crossbar, or did they hit a crossbar? I can't remember now.
It went
on forever.
Things. The two guys I went up with, one of them, Glenn, was in tears at the final. Yeah. Sorry, mate, if you're listening to this, but.
Well, it's true. It's true. Because
all three of us were just. I took my son up and Millwall were in a fucking FA Cup final. You're in a FA Cup final. Then we piled out the ground and I said, hold on a minute. It was we're all going on a European tour. Europe.
Oh, dear.
Some of the fans that were in tears because they just beat them. You just had all of these Millwall fans just bouncing around singing "We're coming on the European tour." And...
Oh dear, it was amazing. Oh, to touch it again those days, listeners, because it was one of those. Well, I picked all of these games have been in their different ways landmark moments. I think probably this is the one that is so far out of your expectation zone that it has its own. Universe almost, the team that day.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You're in a parallel universe. It's like an out of body experience, isn't it? You can't quite believe what's happening. You
can't quite believe it happened because all the other games I've mentioned, and even to finish off, they were great games and they mattered and they had brilliant days and all the rest of it, but they weren't so far out of the they weren't in the twilight zone. this was a day that was unbelievable. 56,000, I think about 20,000 Millwall fans made the, because there was a ticket restriction, which Theo, I think, imposed a ticket restriction. It probably wasn't the worst thing in the world when you look at subsequent and previous events. But the team that day.
Tickets, could you, for friends and and things
they
like
had a closed because it's Old Trafford. I think that they had an upper deck that was closed. Who knows what if we just we probably would have sold it, but you never know who you're going to get then, do you? This was a proper Millwall travelling support, an immense day. But the team that day, listeners, Andy Marshall in goal, Robbie Ryan, replaced by Marvin Elliott on the 56th minute. Matt Lawrence, Darren Wald, Kevin Muscat, who crucially we would lose to injury in the 42nd minute. Andy Roberts came in as his replacement. He would be a big loss for the final when that finally came around. Midfield, David Livermore, much maligned David Livermore, but a player of the season. However, ironically, that was awarded. Dennis Wise, Tim Cahill, Paul Ifill, replaced by Peter Sweeney. I forgot that Sweeney came in so early in the game. The 29th minute for Paul Ifill. I presume that was a knock. Ifill must have taken a knock.
He pulled his groin or something like that.
Did he? Was that? I can't remember now. And doing the research for this, listeners, it always surprises you with something. I've forgotten that Ifill, having created the goal, left the game relatively early, 29 minutes. And then up front, Danny Dicchio and Neil. I like Dicchio. He was a good, solid Millwall striker. And Neil Harris alongside him. Wonderful days. I've picked out Tim Cahill as a. I couldn't let this show go past without mentioning one of the greatest midfielders I ever saw for the Lions. Cahill was 260 games for the Lions, two spells. I don't really count that second spell, listeners. In 2018, 1997 to 2004 was his proper spell. 260 games, 58 goals for Tim. One of the biggest talents I think we ever saw in certainly midfield. Australia's all-time leading goal scorer, and a man who will go on after Millwall to play in Everton, New York, and around the world, become a world football figure. What a great player.
I can't stand him. I really do hate how modern players are, because they happen to be leading goal scorer one season or
just
be around for 4 or 5 years. But I think in Millwall history, I think Tim Cahill deserves to be remembered as one of our all-time great players.
I believe so.
He was such an influence on everything that we did, and he was such a good player.
We were so fortunate in those early, 1997, Neil, when he first joined, along with the likes of Harris and Reed and Ifill, and that kind of late 90s team, when the club was on the brink of bankruptcy, administration, and we've told that story before, but I think we were so lucky to have such a rich vein, find such a rich vein of talent at a time where we really, really needed it. And they all came through to go on to greater things. Tim especially. But I just think we just caught such a break at that time. And what a wonderful day. And I can never, ever forget the 4th of April, 2004. So that's my fourth choice, Neil.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Move along. And last choice, much more recent. And it's quite hard to make these lists, listeners, if you ever decide. I've tried to hit a balance of choices here that illustrate different times. And it's easy to fall into a trap of when you were young, the games seem much bigger and much brighter. But my choice for the last one, Neil, is a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. Millwall 1, Leicester City 0, 18th of February 2017 in the FA Cup. This, I think, is quite hard to judge modern results by the standards of other days, isn't it? We do this a lot, I think, when we do these kind of history shows. You kind of slightly trying to assess players and games of the past in modern terms. But this is quite a recent achievement. But I think the measure of this achievement, to beat a team that were the reigning Premier League champions...
Champions of England.
Millwall as a third division side, League One side in modern parlance, and down to 10 men. And still, I mean, we rode our luck. They had a couple of chances, which we escaped. But to take the game to them and to win the day, it's one of the biggest results in the club's, in all the 50 years I've been there, in many ways, because of the sheer measure of the achievement. Does that sound fair to you?
Yeah, I think I think that when it came, that when the draw was made, you probably wouldn't have found many people to have given us a prayer in this game.
No.
In a way, they played into our hands. They inexplicably left Jamie Vardy on the bench for most of it.
Yeah.
And Chilwell, you know, obviously, I think he went to Sporting Integrity FC in West London, didn't he? but that sums up for me that day was he was too scared to take a throw in.
It was a rabid crowd, wasn't it? It was a den at its best.
Little old Millwall, and it was a big game, wasn't it? And it had that. You talk about that Chelsea game, and I wish I was there. But this had that big game atmosphere, didn't it? People hanging off the top tiers, and wall of noise and intimidation, and everything that we love about a big game down at the Den. And this was
Early kickoff, I think, if memory serves, it was about TV game. I think they kicked it off at 1 or might have been 12:30. I think I've got an idea it was 1. February, it was a grey, cool day. It wasn't warm by any stretch. The Den was packed. There was that very Millwall sense of when you can almost touch the electricity in the Den. Everyone listening to this show knows those, all these, in many ways, these games that I've mentioned have that moment where you feel, blimey, it's real today. This was one of those days.
That whole run had that kind of feel. Do you remember the Aston Villa game on the Friday night?
Yeah, we'd beaten was it Watford? Premier League Watford, I think.
Yeah, didn't we beat Villa, Watford, Bournemouth?
I know we've beaten a series of Premier League sides, but I think the kind of and you've just touched on it there. They were sides I really think really didn't fancy coming to the Den. They were trying their best to remain in the money machine of the Premier League, and they just didn't need the grief of
the trying hassle. They put out second string teams, and they came down and they got their bottoms walloped by us.
It's that boxing term. They didn't want to go to war in the ring with Millwall, did they? And they put in second stringers, and they got their just desserts. To some extent, Leicester weren't quite in that category. They did leave out Vardy. I would agree. Because Vardy's come through the levels that he has, he knows the score at places like Millwall. He's been there and bought the T-shirt. And he was one of those players that I feared because he's a quality striker. And
he was the top striker of the time, or top English striker.
Absolutely. Top England pick, wasn't he? Yeah. Whereas some of the continental players, their jaw would have dropped to what they were facing, I don't think Jamie Vardy's jaw would have dropped to quite the same depth that I might be doing them a disservice. But the fact he was on the bench until
his wife was getting during the game every time he warmed up.
Oh, dear, wonderful stuff. The Mill team that day, listeners, this was Jordan Archer in his good days. He was a good goalkeeper back in the day. It's a shame that it finished the way it did. Jordan Archer, I think he made a couple of good saves in this game. I think they had chances, if memory serves, and we were still in it. But and obviously going down to 10 men when Jake Cooper was sent off, added to the burden. But Jordan Archer in goal, the hero of the day across the back line, Sean Cummings, Byron Webster, good player until he got injured. Jake Cooper, Tony Craig, what a Millwall servant. Neil Tony Craig on the left midfield. Aidan O'Brien, Callum Butcher, a forgotten man. I've forgotten he played in this game. Sean Williams, Shane Ferguson, Fred Onyedinma, leading line up front alongside Steve Morrison, and they all gave 100%. And it's one of the great, great games. Lee Gregory would come in. Jimmy Abdu came in for Butcher in the 75th minute. Marlon Romeo came in for Ferguson in the 86th minute. the man of the hour, the BBC man of the match, was Sean Cummings. And this was a high point of his, I think of a high point possibly of his football career. I know he'd started at Chelsea, just looking at his bio in the Who's Who book, but I can't think much would match this moment, this wonderful moment when he went on a slight dribble into the penalty area in the 90th minute and slotted a ball home with a ball. I never saw him do it afterwards. I hadn't seen him do it before. It was just one of those
God-given
moments.
I think we were all shocked. And I can just remember everybody. There are two goals that I can openly remember going absolutely mental at. It's one. And yep. Liam Trotter's goal at West Ham. Yeah. Sometimes you just go absolute, you just lose it over a goal.
Yeah.
And this was because it was so late in the game, there was no way back for them after this.
No, they looked absolutely devastated when the goal went in. You could see bodies falling to the floor. They couldn't believe they'd been turned over by this third division Millwall side. Yeah.
And it was just everybody just absolutely bananas. And it's one of those things I have experienced it at Twickenham, but that's only because of the sheer weight and numbers.
Mm.
But the stand moved. I'm almost certain it bloody moved. Either that or I ended up three rows from where I should have
A mate of mine, I used to work with. He lives, in the place that was, I think, around Rotherhithe. And he said that when the goal went in, it felt like an explosion. And this was, a couple of miles, maybe a mile and a half from the ground there, Rotherhithe to the Den, maybe a mile. But he said when the goal went in, he heard it. It was like a bomb had gone off. And it felt that way inside the stadium. It was that kind of earthquake kind of quality. Wonderful days.
Live for as a Millwall fan, isn't it? It was a bit like the Sunderland game. We don't have these things very often, but when they do, they're special moments. I'd hate to support a club like Manchester City or Sporting Integrity FC in West London.
I've often wondered this because, I mean, I think we can become a little bit myopic at Millwall in that this is our intense little world and it matters to us. We feel connected to the club. I do wonder at times when you watch the Premier League coverage of City, Chelsea, Arsenal, whatever you like, can you feel connected to it? I don't know. Maybe you can. I don't know. Maybe people do. But I suppose, the smallness of Millwall, which is both its strength and its weakness in all in one, makes it so much more real, Neil. This result, landmark. I mean, as I keep saying, landmark. Just a wonderful, wonderful day. And I'm just looking at the BBC report of the day. There's an image of Neil Harris being interviewed after the game. And, I know that the wheels came off of Neil Harris's management, as all management careers end in failure. But my word, as Ray Wilkins would have said, my word, he produced some massive moments. When you think of this game, the playoff wins and the Everton game that would come a couple of seasons afterwards.
Absolutely.
If you want big Millwall moments, very hard to look far past Neil Harris, one of the great players and a very useful manager for these big time games, the cup tie style games.
So what would be your favourite? Come on.
It's like desert island discs. It's very, very hard to pick one out because each of these games, apart from the Luton game, which was in as just a bit of a wild card, mattered so much at the time. If I'm going to pick one, and that's the challenge here, to pick one, I'm going to go with the semi-final of 2004 because it felt so unlikely. It was so far outside of anyone's expectation. And the rewards for making a cup final at that point were that you could play in Europe. An event I never thought could happen, Neil, because to get into Europe, normally you have to finish high up in the first division. And we had a shot at it in the late 80s. It was quite hard to see us having another shot as football developed into the modern Premier League era. So if I'm going to pick one, I'm going to go with 2004, the FA Cup semi-final out of those five. I do stress to listeners, these are all personal choices, so you may well have other games that mean more to you, but these are just games that mattered to me. But what would your choice be, Neil, just out of interest, if you pick one game ever for Millwall? Very hard thing to do.
Sunderland. The Mother's Day Massacre, which I think was on your original list.
It was on my 10, and I thought we got to lose something, so I had to take that one out. But that was a wonderful day.
The FA Cup final, because I went with my son.
I'd include that.
Ferencváros at home, because we had
that surreal day, wasn't it?
we had a game in the UEFA Cup. Yeah, one of my biggest regrets is actually not going to Ferencváros away.
No, I couldn't go. I had to watch it I watched it in Bexley. There's a pub, Coach and Horses, I think it's called, in Bexley Village. They had it on a live stream there, and that kept failing. But I couldn't make it over to Budapest. Disappointment, obviously. But
it sounds awful, but I'd probably... Because it's kind of agreeing with you in a way, but the Sunderland game would be up there.
I think it's a good choice. One thing I would say, just to close our show, because we're over an hour now, so we don't try to keep it to an hour, listeners. Believe it or not, we do try to keep it to an hour if we can. And I've waffled a lot.
Too many tangents, Nick, don't we?
We do. The one thing, I'm trying to summarise 50 years of following Millwall, Neil, from Millwall beating Pompey in 1972, March 31st, today, back 50 years ago. The thing that strikes me, sounds a bit philosophical, but the Millwall and the world, but Millwall we're talking about, has changed a lot radically from those days. And yet somehow it has remained the same. I think George Orwell said that the world can change totally and yet somehow remain the same. The club that we follow is still tangibly that same club that I first saw in 1972. And that's quite something to be able to say. Yeah, yes, it's changed, but it's still the same, fundamentally the same. And it's been my privilege to have had 50 years of following the Lions. Probably won't make another 50. If I'm 111, I can't see me making it. I can't see me doing a podcast. We're on 111. I might have to jack that one in. Leave it to the kids.
Yeah, we'll definitely do a podcast. Even if podcasts aren't around, we'll find a way.
I think I won't be here for that one, sadly. But 50 years. There we are. Neil, I really want to say thank you for joining me on this show. It's been a very interesting show, personal show. I hope listeners enjoy it. And thank you for listening. And we will be back after the weekend, after hopefully a riot-free visit to Luton. Till then, dear listeners. But thanks for listening and bye for now.
No, the best team of all. Everybody knows us, we're called Millwall. Let 'em come, let 'em come, let 'em come. Let 'em all come down to the den. It's Saturday.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.